From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, tomorrow, Andrew Goss in the Real World of Money. By the way, it's Andrew's birthday. I'd like to call and say happy birthday. You can do that. If you have questions for Andrew Goss about money, you can always send in those questions right now, patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com, and we'll get them on the air. If you can't listen live like lots of people do on Wednesday morning, then Sharon and I are going to take a couple of days off Thursday and Friday. It's been a long time since we've done that, so we'll have some archive shows for you to listen to if you in the habit of listening live at 9 o'clock Central on OneRadioNetwork.com and NaturalNewsRadio.com. From Vienna, Austria, off to Canada. And say hi to David Crow. David is the prez and the head guy up there at the Alberta Reappraising AIDS Society. And really quite a very interesting website. It's aras.ab.ca. David Crow, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Did you have a chance to listen to Crystal Meyer?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't able to. I didn't get the message in time.
Ah.
I hope it was a good...
She's a great lady, huh?
Yes. Yeah, she's very smart, very knowledgeable, very well-trained, and very courageous to speak out against the scientific orthodoxy.
The scientific orthodoxy. Boy, it's amazing, David. I've been involved with health for a long time, and I grew up, well, the last 30 years, kind of believing some kind of idea, I don't know where I got it, that this AIDS virus was maybe got from monkeys and systematically and put into vaccines and stuff to infect people and all that. And, you know, these whole stories, wow. But now I just come in and believe this whole thing is just nothing like it says, huh?
Well, I think the whole HIV-AIDS paradigm is a human construct. And you had a bunch of cancer virus researchers in the late 70s who were basically getting nowhere. And so when AIDS came along, they latched on and literally hijacked the system. I was just reading a book by one of the early insiders, a guy named Harry Habercross, who at least was open enough to consider that some of the health problems among gay men living a fast-track lifestyle in the early 80s were due to their abuse of inhalant drugs known as poppers.
Yeah.
And he was working within the CDC, and he describes how every time he brought up the idea of paupers, it would be, I'm sure there must be something wrong with that theory. We need to do more research. When he tried to get his superiors to co-sign a paper with him, they refused. When he said, well, I want to go to a talk in San Francisco and you know, just air this issue. Maybe it's important that these drugs are carcinogenic and immunosuppressive, and maybe that's part of the puzzle. They said, if you do that, you'll be fired.
Oh.
And that's how the virus orthodoxy was imposed. Smart scientists understood that they would lose their jobs. Some of them were braver, like Dr. Peter Duisberg, and he just kept saying, you know, he believes in the virus, but he doesn't believe it causes any disease. And he's been punished since 1987, and the punishment hasn't stopped since then.
Punished by whom?
Well, punished by his university, the University of California at Berkeley. He's had no promotions. He's given what they perceive as the worst teaching jobs. He's
really?
Got no grants, no graduate students, so he's being punished by the granting agencies, the National Institute of Health, and obviously the pharmaceutical companies won't have anything to do with him because he's saying you don't need drugs to combat a virus that doesn't cause disease.
I mean, that's like saying, well, the world is round and the world is flat, right? I mean, it's that big of a gulf between between folks.
Yeah, and I mean, most people don't understand that these kinds of scientific orthodoxies have always been there. I mean, you mentioned the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 1900s, if a geologist said that he thought that the Earth was dynamic and the continents moved, he would lose his job. And it wasn't until the 1960s when the evidence became so overwhelming that geologists finally said, okay, well, if we rename the theory of continental drift to plate tectonics and take it over, then we're allowed to talk about it. But it took over 50 years for geologists to finally realize the obvious that, you know, with earthquakes and volcanoes, the Earth is not a static place. It's continually moving, and it's just obvious that parts of the Earth would move relative to the other.
I guess we don't think about it a lot, David Crowe, but hasn't it been like that since the beginning of time? There were always the scientists who were kind of adored, like the doctors and the universities, and they had their theories, and it depended on how powerful they were. Boy, if you went against their theories, man, you could get burned at the stake, literally.
I think what's happened, especially in the 20th century, was that scientific institutions and sort of bureaucratic science are what one of the Rethinking AIDS board members, Dr. Henry Bauer, called scientism, took over. And so now you have this massive institution, and the big problem for a massive institution is they have to keep it alive, and that means grant funding.
Hmm.
And so then pandering to the desires of the National Institute of Health, which is the biggest medical grant funder in the United States, becomes critical. So if the National Institutes of Health says AIDS is viral, and anybody who doesn't believe is out of luck for funding, then all of a sudden all your grants assume that HIV is the cause of AIDS and that you're looking for a virus. And, you know, it's been a massive failure. They've promised a vaccine in the 80s. They still don't have a vaccine. They've certainly cranked out a lot of different drugs, but every AIDS drug has a black box warning usually of liver failure, pancreas failure, sometimes kidney failure, severe rashes that can be fatal. So that's all we have, is that people are told if you want to live something approaching a normal life, you have to take drugs that might kill you.
And there's no virus.
Well, there doesn't appear to be a virus. Nobody has ever purified the virus. Hmm. There are no photographs of purified virus. What they do is they take a cell culture, and then they claim that any small particle in the cell culture that's about the size they're looking for is a virus. And if they can find five or six of those together, they'll take a picture and say, oh, look, that's pure virus. But if you look a little bit beyond that, you realize it's actually just a small picture taken out of a massive cell culture where the cellular materials vastly outweigh the so-called viral material.
It's amazing. Crystal Meyer, she went quite, walked us through quite slowly and eloquently, David, the whole testing, the four or five different tests that they have, and
right,
and how they just are meaningless.
Well, yes. I mean, as somebody pointed out, they're antibody tests, the majority of HIV tests, and what is called normally the HIV test is a series of antibody tests. Antibodies are a reaction to a virus, and so that implies that somebody injected pure virus into an animal to generate these antibodies, but nobody's ever done that. I mean, to start with, nobody's ever got pure virus. So basically, they found these antibodies in a higher percentage in people who are sick, and they therefore claimed that the antibodies are antibodies to a virus, secondly, that it's to a specific virus, and thirdly, it was the cause of any disease that these people had. And all of those are very tentative and very hypothetical. And given that the original scientist, Dr. Robert Gallo, was intensively investigated in the 1990s for various forms of corruption and even criminal acts, he got away with the skin of his teeth due to a change of control of the Congress. But given that the fundamental AIDS research relies on the work of Robert Gallo, people should be asking some pretty deep questions about how solid it is.
Hmm. David Crowe is with us. He heads up, he's president of the Alberta Reappraising AIDS Society. Really fascinating website, really well laid out and easy to navigate around, and he's got all the different people that are settling lawsuits, and man, this thing is really starting to come out, the truth, isn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, when it comes to the legal aspect, a man named Clark Baker at the Office of Medical and Scientific Justice has been pursuing some of these criminal cases, and what he's doing is basically what Crystal Meyer did, is saying, putting an expert on the witness and saying, now, can you read the fine print on this test, the part where it says that a positive reaction probably means you have antibodies, and the part where it says, if you have antibodies, it probably means you're infected by the virus? I mean, how can you condemn somebody, in some cases, to 10 or 20 years in jail merely for being HIV positive and having sex when we don't know that these tests mean anything? I mean, it's basically, you know, like saying that somebody has a devil within them, mm-hmm. and therefore anything they do is evil and they must be put to death. I mean, we're really back in medieval times in terms of our reaction to this virus, HIV.
Hmm. I'm wondering, you do you have a good sense, David Crowe, of the amount of awareness or questioning in the gay community, say, just United States, Canada, overall? Do people... this community, are they really thinking about this in an open way, or are they, what's your sense of that?
Well, I definitely know quite a few gay people who are, and there have been since, you know, the very beginning. One name that stands out is John Lauritsen, who's still around. He wrote extensively on the dangers of paupers and also the first AIDS drug known as AZT. But back then, the fear and anger in the gay community was so intense that these prophets basically were excluded and excoriated, and their John's ability to publish was destroyed when the journal he published in was destroyed. Now, I think AIDS is just kind of in the background. It's the kind of thing that if you're a gay man, you give money every year to an AIDS charity, maybe you do the AIDS walk, but the fear is gone because basically the number of people who are getting AIDS has declined so much. They may think that's because the new drugs are so good. They just don't realize what's really been going on. So now it's difficult to get people excited about it at all. AIDS charities are folding. It's hard to get people out for the AIDS walks.
And less and less people are taking the test because they know that they're nothing.
Yeah, I mean, they now, the CDC and, you know, organizations around the world that are trying to promote tests, they're trying to, what they call, normalize the test. So when you go in because you cut your finger, they'll say, oh, why don't we have an HIV test? You haven't had one ever. So, and they know that probably about 1 out of every 1,000 people, if you randomly select about 1,000 people, one of them will test positive. There'll be no apparent reason for this because the test doesn't mean anything. And so 1 person out of 1,000 will basically get the Russian roulette bullet, and they'll be told, oh, you've got a fatal disease. You've been healthy for 20, 30, 40 years, but that doesn't mean anything because now we've discovered that you have this fatal disease, and very soon you will get sick. And they will do some other magic tests, probably the CD4 and viral load tests, and they will say, oh, your CD4 counts are low. Your immune cells are low. Your viral load is high. You must go on the drugs today. And in fact, another change they made just within the last few months is that they used to have standards for putting people on the drugs only when your immune cell count was low. Now they've said it's reasonable to put people on AIDS drugs who are HIV positive no matter what their CD4 immune cell count is. And beyond that, they're now saying that in order to prevent the transmission of HIV, we should put HIV negative people on drugs if they have a partner who's HIV positive or if they're at risk.
Right? Really? Wow.
You know, a prostitute or something, even though prostitutes are not at risk. It's actually very surprising.
And these drugs are in the neighborhood of $1,000 a month?
Well, yeah, somebody who was taking them till quite recently said that her drugs cost about $1,000 a month. And, of course, because AIDS drugs cause so many side effects, it's likely that somebody who's on AIDS drugs will also be on a whole bunch of other drugs. Mm-hmm. For example, they cause your cholesterol to go through the roof, so they'll put you on a cholesterol drug.
Ah.
They'll probably put you on blood pressure drugs. Mm. They'll probably put you on steroids. And so maybe the $20,000 a year for the AIDS drugs is maybe only half of your health care costs. So every AIDS patient is worth a fortune to the allopathic medical community. until they die. And they're getting pretty good at keeping them alive for 10 or 15 years on these drugs until they eventually die of liver failure or kind of cancer or kidney failure.
And the cocktail effect, David Crowe, of all these different drugs, no one has any idea of what that's doing to a particular body.
Well, they would never do a placebo-controlled trial of an AIDS drug. They sort of play this game where we had this trial of AZT in the 1980s, and we proved, in quote marks, we proved that it was effective. And so now, so then they would test other drugs against AZT, but they wouldn't test for health. They would test for what they call surrogate markers. They would test for lab markers. And if you got an effect on the lab markers, they would say, oh, this drug is better than AZT, i.e. slightly less toxic. And then they would test, you know, three drugs, including a new drug, against three old drugs. And they would say, oh, the lab markers are better with this drug than before. The game is to keep renewing the drugs so that you keep renewing the patent. The patent on AZT ran out. If it becomes a generic drug, the price might drop from $12,000 a year down to $1,000 a year or less. So they need to keep new toxic compounds that have an impact on the surrogate markers, not necessarily any impact on your health, you know, any positive impact. They all have a negative impact on your health.
I was listening to NPR a couple of weeks ago, and during this week they were doing all these stories about AIDS, right? Africa, and all these stories about getting people all excited about getting tested and condoms, all this stuff. And there was some AIDS conference, I think, going on in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was the International AIDS Conference in Washington, yeah.
Yeah, and that was going on. And then towards the end of the week, they had this big story about this new, surprise, AIDS vaccine. What's the name of that?
Well, I don't remember the latest AIDS vaccine. They come and go. It's kind of like the latest, you know, how many times have you heard about the new promising cancer treatment that's around the corner, and, a year later it's forgotten? There's been hundreds of vaccine trials, and they all have a little bit of hype, and then they all disappear. I mean, one conundrum with the AIDS vaccine is that the vaccine is supposed to generate antibodies, and yet HIV is detected by an antibody test.
Right.
So if you have antibodies and you haven't taken the vaccine, that is considered to be proof that you have a fatal disease. But if you have antibodies with the vaccine, they say that's proof of immunity. Now, they claim that they can generate different antibodies with the vaccine than a native, what they call HIV infection. But that's highly speculative, and it's very difficult to see how they would be able to say, you know, this person is HIV positive because of the vaccine, and this person is HIV positive because they're infected. The other thing is the vaccines wouldn't be as profitable as drugs.
And yes.
There are a lot more talk now about drugs as prevention.
Hmm.
And so drugs have displaced condoms and vaccines because this is incredibly profitable. You know, condoms, you're not going to spend $12,000 a year on condoms, at least most people.
Most people won't. Unless you're a boy, you got good testosterone levels, brother.
Right. And a vaccine would be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So even if the vaccine was expensive, it's not going to be, you know, more than once every few years, and it's not going to be $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
So you cannot compete with the profitability of drugs. And so all of the highly pharmaceutically connected researchers are now pushing drugs as prevention.
Ah. And then, of course, when you have governments getting involved with paying for them, well, that's a perfect, just a perfect thing, isn't it? It's a great setup.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, it's kind of interesting that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies become socialists when it comes to paying for their drugs, because they know that very few people could afford $12,000 a year for drugs that make you sick and mean that you can't work. So if the insurance companies aren't covering it, which is, you know, probably the case with most, you know, IV drug users, which is one of the biggest risk groups for so-called AIDS, so they want the government to pay for it. It's the same in Africa. They want foreign aid to pay for the drugs because basically people aren't going to pay for the drugs that poison them. And then, of course, you have to convince people that this is actually really good for them. But it's the same with psychiatric drugs. You know, the majority of people on disability in the United States are for various psychiatric conditions, and most of them are on psychiatric drugs and, again, can't work because of the debilitating effect of the drug. So the whole aim is to find somebody to pay for these incredibly expensive drugs. And also, drug companies are greedy, and so if you get X dollars this year, you want to get 10% more next year. Now they're having real difficulty finding enough people to poison. They've killed a lot of them, and that's why they have to try to expand the market by going after people whose immune system has a high number of cells or who are HIV negative.
Well, Bill Gates is trying to help. He's donating billions of dollars to people get vaccinated around the world with these things.
Right.
Oh, boy, man. 26 minutes after the hour, Patrick Timpone, David Crow. How long have you been involved with this work, David, in your website, aras.ab.ca?
Well, I can't remember exactly when I got involved, but it was sometime in the mid-1990s, and I founded the society, the Alberta Reappraising AIDS Society, in 1999.
Hmm.
And got also involved with a bigger organization known as Rethinking AIDS in the mid-2000s, about 2006. And I took over as president, I think, in 2008 or so of that organization. So it's been a long time. And I started as out of a matter of scientific curiosity because my university degree was in biological sciences. But I also was an environmental activist, and so I was kind of attuned to the impact of big corporations on the world, and I started to see the human rights impact when I started to see children being taken away from mothers. I started to see men being thrown in jail for being sexually active. And, you know, all of these things would be reasonable and rational if what the scientists were saying was correct. So here you had a false scientific dogma causing the loss of freedom, the loss of people's children, the loss of people's freedom, just on the basis of a flawed antibody test. And so I started to realize that AIDS was much bigger than a lot of other scientific errors because it involved human life.
Mm.
So if the continents are not moving, it really doesn't send anybody to jail. It doesn't take people's children away from them. It doesn't poison people. So I don't really care whether the continents are moving or not from that perspective. But if the AIDS theory is false, then there's a lot of people whose children are now in foster care and being poisoned, and there's a lot of men in jail who shouldn't be there, and a few women in jail, too, I should point out.
So you have one scientific dogma that's untrue, and then a whole economy and control power mechanism is created, and look what we have now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like if you look at war from the point of view of a military contractor. I mean,
sure.
You don't care where the war is. You don't care who's getting killed, but you want to sell bombers or you want to sell whatever you've got to sell at some vastly inflated price. So here you've got the drug company selling relatively simple chemicals for these massive prices, like how they got to, you know, $1,000 a month for these drugs. They're making a massive profit, and they're addicted to that profit, so they cannot stop. And that's one of the reasons why vaccines and even prevention with condom are doomed to failure, because they're just simply not as profitable.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a little break here. If you have a question, comment for David Crow. I've been at this a long time, this whole AIDS phenomena. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. This is one of our favorite herbs. It's a mushroom. Daniel Vitalis, the Reishi and Shaga dual extraction we have on One Radio Network. Why do they taste so good, and how do you make them?
Sir, thrival tinctures, our Chaga and our Reishi, are not just tinctured mushroom. So what we do is we make a tincture, we remove the mushrooms from the tincture after a couple of weeks, and we boil those mushrooms in spring water to extract those beta-glucans, and then we reduce that down and add that back to the tincture. So the tinctures that we're carrying now are not just tinctures, but they're dual extractions. I feel that what we're offering right now has never been duplicated before, because our mushrooms are currently organic. The water that's being used is spring water. The mushrooms are only fruit bodies, never mycelial biomass, and they go into Miron glass. So I think it's hard to replicate that.
And these Reishi and Shaga dual extraction taste great too. Wonderful attention to detail. Click and order now on OneRadioNetwork.com. Isn't that amazing what he goes through to get these products to the very most powerful as you can? It's just, we love Daniel Vitalis, and he's into it, boy. He's really into it. Check this out, this reishi. Boy, it tastes great, too. BioAge, this bio superfood that we've been taking for a while. We were so blessed to come in contact with it. It's quite an interesting, unique product. With the spirulina dunatella, another astaxanthin, a couple other algaes that are mixed together. Very unique properties, quality, compatibility, and they worked it out. They're hydroponically grown for the highest potential and synergy, and really masterfully put together by Dr. Michael Kiriak, with the rush backing of the Russian government with Chernobyl and keeping the minks from getting croaked with all the radiation. And there was all kinds of things going on with developing this product, and it's cool. And it's you don't have to take a lot, a couple a day. And I think you'll really like the benefits. And just try it for a couple months. Click on the front page of BioPreparation or BioAge. It's the bio superfood, the bio preparations for the four-leggeds. And try yourself a month or two supply. Call them up. They have a number there if you want more information about maybe which one you should get. We like the number three, F3, which is the pink bottle. But you can try any one you want. There are different prices and different in dosages, I guess. Strength, I guess, is the way to say it. BioAge Superfood. You'll love this product. And you can download the free ebook, Awakening the Genius Within. We could all use a little bit of that right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
I have an interesting conversation with David Crow. His website, ars.ab.ca, and he is also involved with, what's the other?
Rethinking AIDS. Is one of the other organizations.
Oh, Rethinking AIDS, right.
President. And I also do the podcast, How Positive Are You?
Oh, you do a podcast, How Positive Are You?
Yes.
That's a great name. And how do folks listen to that?
It's howpositivearyou.com, and that gives you all the links to download it.
Yeah. I went on your website this morning, and I looked at the, what do you call them? The people, what do you call them? All the different scientists. Let me get to the link here. Sorry, it's amazing.
The list of rethinkers.
Rethinkers. I like that term.
Right.
Yeah, you have 2,884 doubters or rethinkers, scientists that have quotes about what they think about the current paradigm of AIDS. And
yeah, there's a list of quotes, and then there's like you say, there's this list of just scientists, journalists, doctors, PhDs in a variety of different fields who have at one point or another questioned the HIV-AIDS dogma. It's a fairly significant number, and some of them have very impressive credentials. We've had pharmaceutically connected scientists go through and say, you've got chiropractors on the list, and you've got, you know, a guy who publishes a little newsletter in Kenya or something. It's like, true, but, you know, those people are also educated and accomplished people, but we also have a lot of mainstream MDs and medical PhDs and a lot of very impressive people. And even today, you know, we're getting people asking to be added to the list. We also have people who've asked to be taken off the list. There was actually, we discovered an effort by an organization known as thebody.com, which is heavily funded by pharmaceuticals. I mean, they have a page that shows their sponsors, and it's basically all the big AIDS drug companies.
Thebody.com?
Thebody.com, yeah. It's a very mainstream organization, and they actually paid somebody to phone up people on the list and say, did you realize that your presence on the list constitutes medical malpractice?
Really?
And we got some of the emails, so they sent them to people, and people would contact us. And after we started to see a pattern, I asked him, you know, did somebody contact you to ask you to remove your name, or did this just come out of the blue? And they said, oh, I got this email. And we started to get several copies of the same email. So obviously the pharmaceutical companies were upset that some scientists and medical doctors were brave enough to put their names out there and wanted to shut it down. That seems to have stopped. But that shows you how fearful the AIDS establishment is about an open discussion of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's similar, David, to what goes on here in this country. I don't know how it is in Canada about people saying, using the word cure and cancer. I mean, you know, the powers that be and the FDA, and they'll just get downright snippy with somebody that says that.
Well, yeah, I read the book, The Cancer Industry, which is still an excellent resource. It describes all of the promising, relatively non-toxic work on cancer and how it was all driven out of the United States. And Canada is no different, despite the fact that we have a publicly funded healthcare system. If you say, oh, by the way, I want an alternative cancer treatment, they'll tell you to get lost. And if you have a child who's got cancer and you try to give it to them, unless you get to Mexico first, they will take your child away from you and force chemotherapy on them.
Yeah, I've read some stories about that. That's amazing.
Well, it is. And it is how they enforce the orthodoxy. It's a lot of propaganda and a lot of fear. And so everybody knows that, you know, everybody starts to question the mainstream knows that you will be punished. And the majority of people don't question the mainstream, because the only thing that gets published about AIDS or cancer or psychological drugs, not the only thing, but the vast majority, is positive towards the allopathic drug radiation surgery approach. And so most people don't even know that there are alternatives. And if they do hear about the alternatives, they assume that they must be wacky, because if they were really that effective, then surely all these you know, highly paid doctors would have latched onto them. They don't realize the reason why allopathic doctors are so highly paid is because they've managed to exclude everybody else and basically create a monopoly on a lot of diseases.
Are you aware of, in Canada or U.S., where the government or some kind of agency is trying to force people to take AIDS tests?
There are no mandatory HIV tests in Canada, with the exception of pregnant women and children, where it's not even technically mandatory. But if a woman refuses to have an HIV test and there's suspicion that she's HIV positive, it could just be that she's got black skin and is a recent immigrant from Africa, if she refuses it, they will probably force the child to be tested. And if they find that the child is positive, they will force drugs on the child. Or they may just give drugs anyway, because HIV tests are known to be inaccurate for the first 18 months of a child's life. So they will probably say, well, we're not sure if your child is infected or not, but we will make you take these drugs.
Of course, if you're just joining us, we talked with Crystal Meyer, a biologist in Vienna, last hour, and all the people on David's website and his research, is the whole HIV positive thing doesn't matter anyway. It's just a scientific dogma.
Yes,
that somebody created. So we have to be clear about that, because, you know, it's so interesting. I guess it's been said so often over in the media the last 30 years that still, I'm sure there's this energy and this thought form that goes around in people's minds when you say HIV positive, right? Like it's a bad thing.
Well, yes, and people are
programmed. That's amazing, because, boy, that's just programming pure and simple, isn't it?
Right, and it's interesting programming, because I think most people don't really care about HIV and AIDS because it doesn't affect them.
Right, maybe they
give a little bit of money to Africa, or if they're in the gay community, they give a little money to some gay AIDS-related charities or the black community or whatever. So they don't really care about it. It's just something you should do, you know, like giving money to starving people in Africa. It makes you feel a little bit good, but it doesn't really affect you at a deep level. But if you are diagnosed with HIV infection or AIDS or cancer, the programming all of a sudden hits you like a ton of bricks, and you are programmed to throw yourself into the arms of the doctor. What can I do about this? And the doctor, of course, always has an answer. We've got new treatments, and you may have heard about the old ones, but these ones are much better.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we can say about the AIDS treatments is that they're, over time, getting less and less toxic. But that's not saying much when they can still cause liver failure. Neuropathy is another side effect I didn't mention. That's when you go numb in your extremities, or you get burning sensations or any abnormal sensation in your periphery. Sometimes that means that people can't walk or they can't pick things up with their hands. It really destroys your quality of life. And, of course, AIDS drugs are notorious for destroying your intestinal system, so you will get vomiting, diarrhea, all kinds of effects like that. And anybody who's interested in health knows that if your intestinal system is disturbed, you're not absorbing food properly, and that's probably a lot of reasons why there's a big connection between AIDS and what they call wasting. You get on the drugs, and you're not absorbing food anymore, and then you start to lose weight, your muscles start to waste, and you become a, quote, AIDS victim.
What is your opinion? I keep thinking that there must be some other components there when you talk about the gay community and why it's been so devastating in that regard. And it seems to me, the more I think about it, it must be more on the emotional, spiritual, mental level than anything else.
Well, it's interesting. I'm not a gay man, so I don't know all the things that were going on.
Yeah.
But I think that gay men were given a choice in the 80s. They effectively had a choice. They could blame the illness on the fact that the fast-track lifestyle, which was not the major lifestyle, but it was the one that was most public,
mm-hmm.
right? The men who came out in San Francisco, New York, Miami, places like that, they could blame this illness on the lifestyle, which included a lot of drugs, especially these inhalant drugs known as poppers.
Yeah.
Or they could blame it on their promiscuity, and remarkably, they decided to blame their illness on their promiscuity. The reason why they were getting HIV at a faster rate than everybody else was because they were having more sex,
huh.
as opposed to the fact that they were taking more drugs than the average person. What would have happened if they had said, well, you know, we don't see sex as a problem, but we see poppers as a problem? I think with education, they could have dramatically reduced the usage of poppers. Even today, you can find websites selling poppers. They're sort of semi-illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the poppers, these horribly smelling vials of this chemical.
Amyl nitrite.
Right. They all have homoerotic names. Things like Iron Horse and Quicksilver and Rush.
Sure.
Those are some of the names. And so there's sort of this, they advertised as video head cleaners, even though, you know, how often do you clean the heads on your video player? And some have even called them CD head cleaners, even though CD players don't have heads, or room deodorizers, even though they smell like dirty socks. And yet the name on the label tells you that they have a sexual, drug function. And that's what everybody knows, but of course everybody agrees not to say it, because if you say it, then maybe they'd be made illegal, illegal.
Yeah, but it is difficult to imagine, as much as prevalent as they were in the 80s, it's difficult to imagine that amyl nitrate could have precipitated all of the great amount of gay people that were getting sick.
Well, yeah, I also don't believe that was the only cause. There was a massive amount of over-medication because gay men were getting a lot of sexually transmitted diseases, especially some of the more extreme sexual practices.
I mean, like herpes, gonorrhea?
Well, some sexual practices involved contact with feces, and so gay men were getting sick, and they were put on antibiotics, overused. They used extra potent antibiotics on them, and then of course they experimented with AIDS drugs on them, and they oriented HIV testing to the gay community. Some people believe that gay men have a higher level of antibodies because they are exposed directly to other male semen, and that may stimulate antibodies, and that may have been the cause for a higher rate of HIV positivity. For whatever reason, they may have also been psychologically programmed over the years that what you're doing is wrong, it's immoral, all of those things. And so when somebody came along and said, you have a fatal illness, maybe they'd been programmed to accept that was true, because they deep down they had all these
guilt,
feelings of shame and guilt,
sure.
other things.
Yeah. Boy, and that boy, we know that that's detrimental to the immune system. Guilt,
right?
Oh, it's
right.
just huge. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree that. I mean, think of all the gay men who live quietly in society, like, you know, so-called normal people,
mm-hmm.
Who have a lover and live with that lover for many years and establish a home and don't have the stresses of maybe coming from small-town America, breaking through the barriers, going to San Francisco or someplace like that, but then living an unhealthy lifestyle at, you know, discovering sexual freedom for the first time, but still dealing with these feelings of shame that were engendered in you perhaps by your parents and at school and things like that, by remarks about homosexual people. So, I mean, I can't analyze the psychology,
sure.
but I think there were a lot of psychological factors. And some gay commentators have written books about, you know, the AIDS psychology and how, you know, it became this negative god that was almost worshipped. And it's almost like people, gay men, were throwing themselves onto the fire willingly. You know, it's a very strange, a bunch of strange phenomena were occurring.
And I do believe I'm correct in saying that there was a huge push in the early 70s for places like New Orleans and L.A., New York, San Francisco, to have the gay community take hepatitis vaccines.
Well, that occurred, I think, before the
AIDS
epidemic.
Before.
They used the hepatitis vaccine. They tested the hepatitis B vaccine, and that also is another theory, is that maybe the hepatitis B vaccine was causing the antibodies that were then later misdiagnosed as HIV
positive. Well, we know the challenges with any vaccine and what it could do to the body with all the stuff they put in it. We have no idea.
Well, I mean, it would be highly ironic if the antibodies from one vaccine caused the diagnosis of another disease, but allopathic medicine is famous for causing, you know, more serious illnesses. In their rush to cure one illness with a pill, they may cause other illnesses or just ignore the underlying cause,
mm-hmm.
and treat something that's not the problem and then later cause a more serious problem.
And also, I mean, we do this show, David, on, you have a podcast, and we have kind of a select audience, Natural News and on One Radio Network, and people come to us with open minds and just have some fun, and we kick around different issues. But I would argue that mainstream America, I mean, even my brothers and sisters, right? St. Louis and whatever, 90% of Americans, I don't think they have any clue what we're talking about. That there is an HIV virus, and if you're positive, man, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the Vancouver Pride Parade, and I went with some friends, and we went to one of the booths that was promoting HIV testing, and I had a little discussion with the woman there, and it was quite obvious that she didn't know anything, and she admitted that she really didn't know anything about HIV testing, but that doesn't stop her from promoting it.
Right.
And, of course, most people, you know, if they see, you know, an organization that seems to be reputable, and it's saying everybody should get HIV tested, they believe that that's a really good thing. But I think more open-minded and questioning people start to ask a lot of questions about the people who are running our society and whether they always have our best interests at heart,
mm-hmm.
or whether financial interests have corrupted them. And they don't even necessarily need it. You know, most doctors get a lot of money from pharmaceutical companies. They get taken out for dinner. They get presents. They get funded to go on a junket kind of conference in a nice tropical resort. They often get their medical education funded by pharmaceutical companies, and they always believe that they're immune from any prejudice from us. But the fact is that people aren't. You know, if your sugar daddy is one of the pharmaceutical companies, you're always going to have positive thoughts about your sugar daddy. You don't really want to think negative things. You don't want to think that company might put a drug on the market knowing that it had side effects that they had hidden from the public.
Sure.
It's very hard to see that. And so, you know, if you take money from somebody, you're owned by that person, whether you like it or not. And so the question is whether or not you admit it.
David Crowe, there to this day, 2012, there's millions of doctors giving people statin drugs, a $10 billion a year industry, if not more, when the whole cholesterol thing we know is turned upside down. It's not what they say it is.
Right. Well,
so,
I mean that's,
so they can't even get to the cholesterol. I mean, how long is it going to take them to figure right. figure AIDS out?
Well, I guess
I hate to be so negative there, but gosh, I mean, you just got the proof is in the pudding. I mean, these.
Well, that illustrates a few things. First of all, their disease model is wrong.
Right.
They're saying cholesterol is a problem.
Right.
And then secondly, they're hiding the fact that these statins are actually quite toxic, and they've had to pull quite a few of them off the market. And they probably will eventually pull them all off the market. And so here again, you've got this double-edged sword. It's like they're going after the wrong thing, and they're using the wrong tool to go after it. The same with HIV and AIDS. You know, they're going after a virus that doesn't exist, and they're using highly toxic medications. And then they're, just like with cholesterol, they're measuring CD4 counts and viral load as you measure cholesterol. They're not measuring your actual health. I mean, most people don't need to measure health. If you see a guy walking down the street, he's staggering a little bit, he's emaciated, his skin is white, his hair is thin, you say to yourself, that person's really sick. They must be on chemotherapy or something. And if you see somebody who's muscular and tanned and fit and they're jogging down the street, you think to yourself, that person's probably quite healthy. But doctors can look right past that. They can see the opposite. They see the guy running down the street and they say, but his CD4 counts are only 200. So he needs to go on the drugs today or he's going to die. And that guy walking down the street with his emaciated face and that hump of fat on his back, he's taking the AIDS drugs and he's a success because his CD4 counts are now 600 and his viral load has vanished. So he is a big success. You just need to not look at people's health if you're going to be an allopathic doctor.
Boy, I'm getting some questions. I don't even know if I want to go here, but well, I don't even like the word. But the word is eugenics, right? Where there's just a lot of big, big money power people that just want to kind of thin out the population. And George asked about your opinion on eugenics.
Well,
you don't have to go there if you don't want
to.
Yeah,
no, it's always difficult to distinguish a conspiracy from, you know, a real conspiracy from sort of a conspiracy of common benefits. I mean, it is interesting that the two groups that are highly prejudiced against in America, gay men and blacks, mm-hmm. are the targets for AIDS. But whether they're trying to deliberately get rid of them, I'm not so sure about that. But that is certainly the impact. Now, you know, given that only, you know, 1 out of 1,000 people are HIV positive, it's a pretty inefficient way to get rid of people. It's a higher percentage in the gay community. And it hasn't really worked from that perspective, if that was the intention. But I think it was just greedy scientists who said, we've got to make a virus to cause. We've got to get the drug companies in on this. We've got to get some expensive drugs going. And it was in everybody's best interest. It's like the head of Lockheed Martin. You know, he doesn't really want war. He just needs war to keep his profits going.
And interesting analogy.
You know,
he doesn't really want it.
Yeah, and I don't really care if you invade Iran or Iraq or South Africa. I really don't care as long as you buy my stuff. And I think it's a similar thing going on. You know, it's like we'll diss one of the AIDS drugs, say it's too toxic, but the replacement is always going to be another AIDS drug, and it's probably going to be more expensive.
Well, this paradigm with the medical schools and the pharmaceuticals and the politicians, this boy, I'm just practical in what I'm saying. I don't see how that's going to get busted up, or will we? I mean, they're going to take this out for a spin and see what it'll do.
Well, they've been getting away with it for about a century.
Yeah, about a century, right.
Until more and more people, you know, stop supporting them, stop buying what they're saying, stop. I mean, the first thing is to stop going to your medical doctor for checkups, because I'm 55, and, you know, they will try to test you for cholesterol and blood pressure and this and that, and they will find something, and they will get you on pills. That's just
no doubt about it.
And you won't be healthier for it. I want to, you know, if I die of a heart attack at 75 and I had a good life up to that point, I'm going to think that's actually pretty good versus at 55 being put on a statin, which caused, you know, muscle problems and meant I couldn't exercise anymore, and spending maybe the last 10 years of my life in a wheelchair or in a hospital or something. I don't want that, so I'm going to stay away from them.
And on a worldwide basis, when we think about the third world countries, and then we have WHO and the UN and CDC and NIH and this whole, boy, it's just a big spooky mess, boy.
Well, they're all arms of the pharmaceutical companies.
They're all,
you know, because there's all this exchange of high-profile people at the top levels. There's all this lobbying. I mean, it's just the same as city council. You know, who has the most interest in what city council does? Well, the developers. So the developers always sponsor candidates to be mayor or councillor or whatever. And they all, you know, it's all, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Developers are becoming city councillors, and city councillors are becoming developers. And everybody knows there's a lot of money in getting the right to develop new tracts of land or getting tax concessions or whatever. And this is just, you know, this is not small town politics. This is a big money game. AIDS drugs routinely have sales over $1 billion a year. So you're talking enough money to make people do just about anything. If you can get your drug added to the WHO's list of essential AIDS medications, or if you can get it picked up by the U.S. government, or if you can get a doctor to go around promoting it, you know, that's how you make your money. And people like Dr. Peter Duisberg and organizations like Rethinking AIDS are just an impediment to increased profits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but I suppose more and more souls around the world are understanding that all of these organizations and politicians do not have our best interests at heart, do you think?
Well, it seems like everybody I know who you know, I'm talking about people outside the circle of activists, like, you know, ordinary people who don't really spend too much time thinking about medicine and healthcare. Almost everybody I know has an experience with somebody who was seriously injured by the medical system, a drug reaction, a surgery that went bad. So more and more people are realizing that, you know, this system can kill you, and we shouldn't be worrying so much about old people who can't afford their medications. We should be worrying about old people who are on 20 different pills a day and are walking around in a fog because they're being destroyed by the drug.
I have first-hand knowledge of that. Amen. Yeah. It's just, and God love them, you know, the older people, they believe that the doctor is right, so they want the drugs. You know, well, my doctor says that I need to take this, so I want it.
Well, and when they get into a nursing home, they don't even have a choice anymore. I mean, somebody else is making the decision, and once you get enough drugs in you, you know, you can't make a decision. Yeah.
Well, David, thanks for your work. You're a nice fellow. I appreciated your website, aras.ab.ca. And maybe folks will like this podcast and click the like button and maybe throw it around to some of the different forums and places to talk about it and open up some minds about this thing that they call AIDS.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. I enjoyed the discussion, and I really appreciate you being brave enough to tackle this subject.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure, David. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
That's a nice man, huh? Well, I hope you enjoy that. I learned a lot, and we often say on One Radio Network that nothing is as it seems, and with each passing day, that phrase gets more and more cemented into our little brain, doesn't it? Oh, God. Okay, Andy Goss's birthday tomorrow. We're going to have a birthday edition of The Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. Thanks to Ranger Mike Adams for Natural News Radio for allowing us to stream. And if you're on Natural News, Robert Scott Bell is coming up next. If you're on OneRadioNetwork.com, go to Natural News. Listen to more stuff. Thanks to Sharon, the love of my life, and our web producer and web designer and producer. And I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock Central.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is One RadioNetwork.com.